welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast, where we watch a series of movies all in one day and then discuss them afterwards. My name is John, and joining me today we have Josh.
Vilmer! Get that bitch!
And we have Matthew.
Do your thing, cuz.
And this month we decided to watch all of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre films.
Wow.
Which you would, like, for some reason when you say that, it sounds like there shouldn't be that many, but then when you actually go and do the research and look, there are right now 7 of them, which is just crazy. Talk about, like, 5 too many.
Yeah. Soon to be 8 already. They're already making another one.
Yeah. Are they really?
Is
it a sequel to this latest one?
It's really confusing. It will be a sequel, but they're calling it Texas Chainsaw 4, although it's technically Texas Chainsaw 3, because this
3D.
One is a direct sequel to the second one, which is right. So 3D would be the second one.
Because this one should be, the new one should be called, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah.
2, or whatever, like, the second 2.
Yeah.
So they're just
calling it 4.
They're calling it 4.
That is really confusing.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot of them.
Only bested by the new terrible trend of horror film titles with A Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia. Have you seen this?
I'm proud to say that I've worked on this film.
Really? Yeah. Ghosts of Georgia? But it's a Connecticut
the
haunting.
Only, it used to be called Haunting in Georgia, but because it's technically associated with the Haunting in Connecticut franchise, just to get a couple extra bucks, they called it A Haunting in Connecticut 2,
right.
Ghosts of Georgia.
Because that franchise just did gangbusters so much, clearly. We had to connect the two.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's ridiculous. But I personally have been a huge fan of the Texas Chainsaw, well, maybe not necessarily the franchise, but certainly the first film for many, many years.
Certainly one of the best horror movies ever made.
Yeah, I love that movie. It's pretty awesome. And the sequels that follow have their moments. They're kind of okay. For the most part, I could kind of more leave them than take them.
Yeah.
But
pretty repetitive.
Yeah.
Honestly, if it was just Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Texas Chainsaw 3D, those two together, like, basically comprise everything I love about horror movies in, like, two things.
Right. And actually, we should mention for the listener, like, the kind of surprise we came into in this marathon, and we'll obviously get to the last movie later, but we kind of came out of Texas Chainsaw 3D as, like, big fans of it.
Oh,
which I was really surprised,
like,
about.
Like, huge fan.
That movie was way better than anything I could have possibly expected.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, well, I mean, obviously we'll get to it when we get to the end, but that was just one of the biggest surprises for me.
Yeah.
Just a little tease for you.
Yeah. I'm curious, how did you guys first see the first movie? Which I guess, like, we can go ahead and get into the first movie, which is, of course, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of 5 youths. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Like, I'm curious how you guys saw it for the first time, because for me, it was just, I was working in a video store and I rented it. I wonder, like, what was your guys' first experience with the movie?
Same thing here. I was working at Blockbuster and I rented it, and then the following 3 nights, I rented the next 3, because at that point, they had not done the reboot yet. They'd only had 1, 2, and then Leatherface, and then The Next Generation.
Right.
So I watched them over 4 nights consecutively, and was elated, and then, like, laughing a lot, and then, like, bored, and then confused.
Right.
Yeah, for me, I think I watched it in high school for the first time. And again, just like all of you film score nerds, I was working at a video store at the time, and it's obviously notorious.
Right.
And people had been telling me for years how crazy it was, and so it's like, tonight's the night. I'm doing it. And actually, to be totally honest, it had been a little overhyped for me, only in the sense of what to expect gore-wise.
Right.
Like, I was, like, actually, when I sat down to watch it, I was, like, really nervous. I was like, oh my god, is this going to be... I mean, this is pre-Saw and Hostel type stuff, where, like, the, like, torture porn, like, heavy gore stuff hadn't become super popular yet. And so when people were telling me, like, oh my God, Texas Chainsaw is so fucked up, you will not believe. I was like, I sat down, like.
And everyone always sounds exactly like that. Like, oh, it's so fucked up.
Oh my God. Oh my God. So I was like, actually sat down and was like really nervous. And what's interesting about it was like that whole intro to the movie, like the flash bulbs or whatever. I mean, the
posed corpse.
Yeah, like the title card where the scrolling title or
right, John Larroquette's talking.
Yeah. That like freaked me out because it really gives this such a grimy tone right off the bat. And I was like, how deep am I going to go in this? But then it turned out to not be as visually intense as I was expecting. Which I know, like we discussed in the movie, like the mind fills in a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of it's implied.
Yeah, it's a lot of implied violence. So
yeah, well, I mean, the reason I asked how you saw it, and I guess maybe the experience was different for you, but for me, I'd heard that it was really violent and stuff, but I didn't quite have the like overhypeness of it. Like I just sort of liked horror movies, threw it in, and I got the feeling the first time I saw it, and I watched it by myself, like on video, that it's like I shouldn't have been watching it. What I was doing.
Same. Yeah.
It really felt like you had gone and bought like a snuff film and kind of threw it in the dark, and you're just doing something wrong. Because especially like you mentioned, the opening crawl to me really feels like one of those movies you'd watch in school that they put on like an 8mm projector. Yeah.
Like a PSA.
Public service announcement. Yeah.
Like that's the narrator, you know, is just like in the year 1970. Like, it just makes it feel like obviously the movie's not real, but it gives it this weird sort of reality that like you wouldn't expect.
Well, and they claim it being based on a true story.
Right.
So it kind of is.
Kinda sorta. No. So when you have the based on a true story, which back in that day, like meant a little more than it does now to me, because every other shitty horror movie is like based on true, and like no, it's not. You're totally making this up. But for me, I guess now that I'm remembering, I guess the first time I watched it with my parents or my mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
oh,
wow. Jeez, really?
And I think she actually had the same reaction to it as well, that she had heard about it for so many years and was like very wary of it. And so when she actually sat down to watch it, I think she was expecting a little bit less. A little bit more on-screen violence and less implied violence than there actually was. And so I think our reaction to it initially was like, oh, well, that wasn't as bad as we were expecting. Although I did love the movie. Like, I thought it was great.
Right.
It didn't overwhelm me with its violence.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is like the horror that really comes out of that movie is like the insanity of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just like so out of just everything that is normal and just... it's hard to wrap your head around the psychosis of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think that's sort of the clever trick the movie kind of plays, especially with your expectations of it. Like you said, the first time you thought it was going to be super gory, and obviously it's called the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, your expectations the first time are like, okay, I'm going to watch a guy with a chainsaw murder
just
a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And then the movie starts, and you're like in this creepy cemetery with these bodies, and then pretty much every individual in the film that's not our main characters is super creepy.
Yeah, batshit weird. Nuts, though.
There's that weird drunk guy like lying in the grass, like just
blurting
gibberish. Yeah. He's like, there's that crazy shot where he's like almost upside down, like beer spilling and stuff. And to me, what I liked about it was I had hyped myself for like, okay, I'm gonna see a bunch of people get killed, but the movie's so scary and creepy in ways that you don't expect.
Yeah.
In just that like weird the sort of paranoia of the movie is awesome. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Like I remember like scenes of them just sort of exploring the house and seeing like a weird ornament hanging and this kind of weird voodoo stuff just really creeps you out. And you're sitting there. What I love about the movie is it doesn't provide an explanation really for any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You're just sort of left with like, what, like why would someone put this here? What is this? Is this some weird omen? What? Mm-hmm. The movie's so creepy, and then by the time the actual murdering starts, you're just already so creeped out.
Yeah.
But that like it plays really well because they stretch out this like long kind of uneventful beginning of like everything's creepy, but nothing really bad has happened yet, except for like picking up the hitchhiker and he's crazy and cuts himself. And
well, that's why that scene is so important.
Right.
It's because without that, you wouldn't be quite as on edge.
Yeah. But I mean, everything is edgy and like everything looks run down and crazy, like and just, but like not in a like a threatening way, but just in an ominous way. And then suddenly, when the violence starts, just like, boom, there it is. Oh my God, he just smacked that guy to death, and then like slam door shut, like.
Yeah.
Violence done.
Yeah, the transition from this everything's nervous to the shit hits the fan is the best transition in any horror movie. Because, like, even the best, like, creepy movies like The Exorcist or The Shining, it's a slow burn. You know what I mean? It's like the step from, like, we're okay to, like, we're fucked is, like, takes, like, 40 minutes in, like, both of those movies. Whereas this goes in literally 3 seconds. It's like, well, who? Anyone home? Anyone home? Right. You're dead. Like, it's, like, crazy.
What I love in that moment that there's a score to it, but there's no cue until after he's already killed a guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he just comes in, you see him, hammers him in the face. And normally, most movies would have some big a pop-out sting. Sound or score. Yeah. It's just silent, and it almost catches you by surprise. You're like, oh, whoa, he already got him? Whoa.
Yeah.
And then when it's that slamming of that, like, nasty metal door, and then right as it hits, they're like, brrrr.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, shit.
Also, I like how they showed, like, usually when somebody, like, gets hit by the hammer or something, it's just like, oh, they're dead, and you see, like, their bleeding head or something. Yeah. But, like, you see him convulsing on the floor, and he keeps just smacking him until he, like, stops. It's just like... so brutal.
Right. And there's been so much talk about slaughterhouses and hitting, you know, cows with sledges and stuff. I like that when that actually happens, like you said, it's like a real portrayal of, like, he's almost like he's killed an animal or something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not just this clean, he's done. But yeah, he still has these death rattles and just,
it's so rough.
It's so nasty.
And then, they put you right back where you were. Just like, it's just pick you up and, like, show you this terror and then put you right back. It's like, door slams, then, like, scene's over. You go back to the other kids and just wait for it to happen again.
Right.
And it does, and it's so good.
But then what's amazing is after a while, you sort of get used to, like, okay, like, I'm now adjusted to Leatherface is murdering all these people. And, okay, this is a slasher movie, and here we go. And then the movie just throws you even more crazy curveballs of just this weird oddball family and their fucking dead bodies and grandpa and all this crazy shit.
The dinner scene is insane.
Yeah, it's just out of control.
And it's awesome. But what's great to me about how insane this movie is that for the most part, I'm not going to say every decision these people make, like, I'm okay with, because certainly picking up the hitchhiker, I was like, are you fucking retarded? Like, there's no way that I would let that guy in my van.
That dude could not look creepy.
Yeah, he's going to kill you. But for the most part, after that, all the characters make decisions that, for the most part, I'm, like, on board with. You know, it's like, we're stuck, we have no gas, we are literally out of options, what next? There's a house. Maybe they can help us.
Yeah, they hear the generator.
They hear the generator, so they know there's someone there. They know, like, it's semi-civilized because they're using generators for power. Like, it's the next stage of them getting fucked over sort of seems inescapable, which is what I think is the best setup of this movie. Because a lot of horror movies, you're like, why would you do that? Like,
power went out. I'm going to the basement.
Yeah, like, they just purposely put themselves in shitty situations, which we'll get to in Texas Chainsaw 3D. But yeah, the fear for me in this is like, well, sometimes you're just completely out of control. Which, like, you know, we've talked about it, Josh, but, like, Lovecraft stories, that's the best part about Lovecraft is, like, that sensation that there's just no getting out of it. Like, you're doomed from the start. Like, no matter how good, no matter how smart you are, you're going to die.
Well, at least in so much as, like, the thing that you were against, you will only survive this if it lets you.
Yeah.
Like, you're powerless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's the feeling of powerlessness is just, like, but in the face of, like, logic and reason is, like, the most scary thing because there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk a bit about you mentioned the hitchhiker. I think the hitchhiker scene is really well done.
Oh, yeah.
Because that guy is just so ridiculously creepy. And also, in addition to that, I think the guy that plays Franklin is really awesome. I can't tell if he's just this amazing actor or if they just found this, like, this weird guy. Piece of shit.
This fey, whiny guy.
Yeah. But I'll take it whichever way because he's honestly my favorite character in the film is Franklin. Yeah. I love him. I don't know why. But just that I like how everyone else in the van is reacting like they're trying to be polite. They're not really talking to the guy. And Franklin just comes out with, like, well, I guess we picked up Dracula.
just straight up.
like the way he just sort of comes out with the awkwardness of the situation. Oh, man, when that guy slashes his arm.
Oh, yeah.
It's a straight razor. Like, it looks crazy.
Well, his, like, the hitchhiker is a pouch made of, like, squirrel face or whatever.
Jesse yesterday was like, oh, don't mind me and my my squirrel neck thing.
Yeah, my neck squirrel.
Yeah, neck squirrel.
But I just love how he, like, manages to have, like I said, it was, like, Felix's bag of tricks. Because, like, every time he needed something, it was just, like, fit in this little tiny squirrel.
It was like Mary Poppins bag.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he had a camera and a razor and, like, gunpowder, I guess.
Gunpowder,
tinfoil, and matches.
Tinfoil. It was just such an amazing, weird...
And it was a big camera. Like, it should have taken...
I don't know if the camera... Was the camera in the bag?
Maybe the camera was on his around his neck.
I think the camera was outside the bag, but...
Okay, that makes sense.
But still, just his whole setup is incredible. And I love how, like you're saying, like, Franklin's reaction to everything. I remember after they even get rid of the hitchhiker, he's, like, they're sitting there at the gas station or whatever, and he's, like, looking at the knife or whatever. He's like, hey, man, you think that's real blood on there? And I'm like, dude, the guy just cut you. You're like, yes, that's real blood. Like, are you crazy?
That conversation also starts with him saying, like, you think I said something to make him angry?
Yeah.
Like he was insane. Don't worry about it, Franklin. This one's not on you.
Yeah, he's so self-conscious that maybe he started it.
Yeah.
Also, I like Franklin's art of blowing the raspberry.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that scene is just crazy. Like, all his buddies are having fun, and he's just like, oh, let's go, Franklin. Like, over and over again.
So awkward.
You just never... The movie's so unique and weird. Like, you just don't see weird stuff like that all the time.
Yeah. It doesn't really... I think the best thing about, for me, this movie is not its ability to, like, scare you in this, like, traditional sense, like, boo scares or something. It's just to make you so uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're on edge.
You're just, like, for me, I'm just, like, even the hitchhiker scene... The scene, the dinner scene, like, it's not about direct horror. It's just how fucking uncomfortable it would be to be in that situation. It's so awkward.
And, like, every time that you get a reprieve and you're like, well, hopefully, like, this is, hopefully we can get out of this situation. It's not bad. Like, it always just gets worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, always. Yeah. Until the very, very end. And then you're crazy.
I think the most... I mean, there's a lot of creepy stuff in the movie. I think the scene where I get the most creeped out is just they have, like, Leatherface after a kill, and he's kind of running around the house looking like he's almost confused, like, where are all these people coming from? And he's looking around, he's kind of panicking, looking out the window, and then he just stops and sits, and it's him just sort of sitting by the window. He's not killing anybody,
like,
he's not doing
his lips
anything. He's
stuff.
Just sort of, looking there, and the camera's, like, zooming in on him as he licks his really fucked up teeth.
Yeah.
Because you don't really... I think it's the best look you get of him in the whole movie. And you're just sitting there like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? That I think my favorite part about Texas Chainsaw is just the fact... All the craziness they show without an explanation for it. Because I think if you take the real life, you know, Ed Gein story, which, listeners, I don't know if you know, but... Ed Gein is the sort of murderer that both Texas Chainsaw and, like, Psycho are based on.
And Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, and, I think more specifically Buffalo Bill. With his
That's right.
Yeah, with his whole skinning and stuff. And transvestite kind of thing going on. but what's crazy about that, and I think why that's had such an influence on so many movies, is because there's just no explanation for why this guy went insane. Like, the real Ed Gein had, like, he dug up bodies very much like in Texas Chainsaw and, like, dug up his mom and made furniture out of body parts and, like, wore skin and shit. Like, just like a nutcase.
Yeah.
And what, in real life, there is no explanation for that kind of horror. And the movie, I think Texas Chainsaw is the best example I've ever seen of just terror and weirdness with no explanation for it. The movie gives you nothing.
Yeah.
And I think really later movies make a big mistake trying to sort of rationalize, like, the hows and whys why this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it is most pure in the first movie.
Yeah, that's true. Like, the scariest thing really kind of, or one of the scariest things out there is the unknown.
Exactly.
And when you don't understand it and it's like, it's against you, it's like the scariest thing. Like, yeah, it was folly to try and explain that.
Totally. I mean, just in the way you mentioned Hannibal Lecter, like, that's what makes Hannibal Lecter terrifying. Is like, why is he doing this? I have no idea. And then they make mistakes, like they go make a prequel, like Hannibal Rising, and let's show you why he would do this. And you're just like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much better when you don't know.
Because it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to the horror of the circumstance.
Same thing with Halloween. I mean, the franchise had been petered out long before they got to this, but then Mike Myers dedicated Rob Zombie dedicated half a movie to why Mike Myers was the way he was. And, like, who cares? It's not fun to watch that. I liked seeing him scary. Yeah.
Let's take away the best thing about Halloween, which is that Michael Myers is there's no explanation. He just goes and kills people, and it's terrifying.
Yeah, like, let me try and justify to you why he's killing people so that it cannot be as horrific.
Exactly.
Like, ugh.
But you mentioned the dinner scene. I feel like we should talk about that because
maybe because we see it six more times.
Oh, my God. Those movies are so repetitive. Like, well, we'll get into that.
What's crazy is none of the other dinner scenes touch the first one, but I think the reason it's done so many times is because it's probably one of the best scenes in the first movie. It's so memorable. And I get really creeped. I was creeped out the first time I saw it, and then once I sort of became a big fan of this movie and kind of looked up and read about the production of and stuff.
Fucking crazy.
Honestly, literally watching what's happening in the story happen in real life.
It's more scary to me knowing that it's kind of halfway just actually happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what I get where like it feels like a snuff film because it hurt that woman's reactions, the main character who's getting tortured and stuff. Yeah. It's one of the most genuine terror performances I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they fucking like really cut her finger and really did crazy shit.
And they were all like on drugs and it was like 114 degrees and it was like 19 hours into shooting and they're all just out of their minds doing crazy things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like what is the story of the finger?
No, yeah. If anyone wants like the willies, go just watch the director's commentary of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It might scare you more than the movie. Because from my understanding, when I was watching it, the DVD I had Toby Hooper and it had the guy that played Leatherface,
Gunnar Hansen,
exactly, on the commentary. And what they said was they ran into this situation where the guy playing Grandpa, who's like super creepy, sucking blood and stuff, that guy's makeup apparently took hours and hours to put on. I mean, that even takes that long today, so I can't even imagine at that time how long it took. And during the summer when they were shooting, it was like this record-breaking heat and all this stuff. So the guy playing Grandpa made this declaration. He did one shoot, I think, where she runs in and finds him for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a day. And then he put on his makeup for the second time, which was supposed to be they were going to shoot the dinner scene over several days. And he made this declaration like, I'm never putting this on again.
Yeah.
You better wrap me today because I'm never coming back. Yeah. And that's it. So they're sitting there and they decide to shoot the entire dinner scene in one day.
Yeah.
Which is, it's an extended scene. It's like, I don't know, like a quarter of the movie or something. 25
minutes.
Yeah. So all that shit is shot in a day. It's like friggin' the 70s. Everyone's doing cocaine and LSD and just drugs. Everyone's out of their mind. And you can kind of tell just watching it. And the story goes that they were shooting the scene where he was cutting her finger in order to give the blood to Grandpa for the first time. And they had, they literally just used a knife and put tape on it. Mm-hmm. So it's a real knife with just tape. And they had some apparatus that was supposed to feed like fake blood out, but it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And they were doing take after take after take. And it just wasn't working. So the guy playing Gunnar Hansen on the commentary, like cool as a cucumber, basically says, yeah, I was kind of in a weird headspace and, you know, I don't know why. It's literally, it was like kind of insanity that it seemed rational in my mind. But I said, well, I guess if I just take the tape off and cut her hand, then it'll work. And I didn't think about, you know, I was hurting somebody. I just thought what was best for the movie. So the take in the movie is like he took the tape off and they just straight up cut her hand.
Yeah.
And the grandpa sucking her real blood.
Ugh.
And the woman's tied up and gagged and stuff. Screaming. So there's no, I doubt they were smart enough to have some safety word or something.
No.
So she's probably just freaking out.
Yeah.
So like it's just nuts. Like they cut that actress.
Yeah.
For real.
That scene is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Yeah, and I think you mentioned, like, when they're the mallet on her head.
Oh,
totally hit her head.
Totally. Because that scene, like, lasts for, like, 30 or 40 seconds, and you can see the hammer is a hammer. Like, it's hitting that metal bin real hard. And there's, like, one or two instances where it makes contact with her. Like, it's not...
Yeah, I mean, like, you can see as it's arcing down, it like, and Grandpa is, like, losing his grip on it, it, like, changes course once it gets to her head.
Yeah, by accident.
Like, it makes contact several times.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a legit big hammer that, like... I mean, it had some real heft to it.
Yeah.
And even if somebody's just dropping a hammer on you, like, that hurts.
Yeah. I can't imagine what that woman went through filming that movie. I mean, they all went through some shit, but just knowing, like, one, her being actually cut... getting hurt by hammers, like the fact that it was, like you said, record-breaking heat. I remember in like some behind-the-scenes or documentary, they were saying that it was like well over 110 degrees, like on some shooting days, inside tiny little spaces with no AC.
Yeah. And lights.
And lights and film lights.
And like real chicken feathers and bones and real human bones. That's right, yeah.
Everything was getting, like, I remember hearing that, like, there was stuff on set that was, like, festering.
Yeah. The food, like, on the plate and stuff was, like, rotting throughout the day. And that, like, there were literally people between takes running outside of that dinner table room or dinner scene room just going to throw up because the smell was so bad in there. Like, crazy.
Yeah. So that to me, you put all that in a stew and out comes just the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, which is out of control good.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad for all those people having to suffer through that, but it makes for one of the most horrifying viewing experiences I've ever seen.
One of the worst days ever. One of the best scenes ever.
No, it's just one of those things where it's like, I feel really bad for the people involved in some ways because just today, there would never... That movie could not get made now. And if it did definitely get made, then it probably would never get released because there'd be people suing. You know, like she would sue today. Like, you cut me? You cut me on the making of this movie? Like, that's crazy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I guess if you're, you know, on acid in the middle of the afternoon, just don't complain as much.
Yeah.
It was a special time.
We should, I guess, wrap up the first movie at the very end where she runs out. Because I just love that scene of the trucker that sort of comes upon this madhouse. Yeah. I feel so bad for that guy because he's just going about his day. This trucker just pulls over to find this bloodied woman being chased by this chainsaw maniac.
He's pretty noble. Like, the fact that he didn't, like, see the chainsaw guy and then just pull away. Like, he actually, like, stays
to help.
He
grabs this big wrench. Like, okay, well, it might come down to it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Oh, I should, you know, I also want to talk about, before we move on, just the cook at the gas station guy, I thought was just extra creepy and really good.
Yeah, because he has like a kind of a Mr. Rogers, like a Southern Mr. Rogers feel. And then like when she runs to him and, like, you know, is like, help me. And he's like, I'm going to beat you with a broom. And I'm the guy who cooks people.
Well, it's such a great surprise in the movie because I remember the first time I saw it, like, I just thought he was on the level and she runs in.
Because he's introduced before the crazy starts. So you kind of associate him with, like, safe world.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're way more freaked out about the fact that he leaves her alone and the door's open.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there, you're not thinking about him as a threat. You're just like, oh my God, Leatherface, he's going to come around the corner. He's going to kill that guy. Like, oh no. So when the guy comes in with like a burlap sack and a broom, is like, don't worry, Missy, we'll take it, and just basically tries to kidnap her and successfully does. That it's just so sad and just, it sucks for her so much. Because it's like, oh, she was free. Oh, wait.
No.
And that scene where he's just driving her back to the house.
And poking her with the stick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
God, constantly. So weird.
Don't worry, it's going to be okay.
Oh, my God.
Oh
yeah.
I think what this movie also does really well is that it strikes the perfect balance between looking low budget and grimy and being really well shot.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Like, it has this feeling like, oh, everything's just kind of happening. Like, they just turned the camera on and it's capturing the insanity, but it's like really controlled. Like, I know in the rest of the series they repeat the shot, and in other horror franchises too. But where the camera goes under the swinging bench it's like the butt shot of her like walking towards the house. It's like a phenomenally well shot like image. And it's really iconic. And it's just funny to have something so well crafted amidst this like tone of just like mayhem. Like I think it's like one of the best balances of that I've ever seen in a movie.
Definitely.
A horror movie.
And there's so many good, like, zoom shots.
Yeah.
I feel like the zoom is an art that's kind of lost in modern-day filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, when I was in film school, like, they said, like, don't ever zoom.
Yeah, I love it. Because, you know, Kubrick uses it a lot.
Yeah.
And it's always amazing in his movies. It has this cool way of just sort of drawing your eye into something that important that's happening. And in Texas Chainsaw, it's happening constantly.
Yeah.
Like, almost every other shot has some sort of zoom in or something. Yeah. And yeah, I really miss that kind of photography in movies. Now it's very just sort of handheld and
medium shot. Like, that's it. The whole movie, medium shot.
It's not quite as like crafted as like, I am drawing your attention to this.
Yeah. I don't know. I was really impressed with it watching it this time. I mean, I've always liked the way the movie looked, but this time I really noticed how well put together it actually was.
Yeah, because once you're seeing it for the second or third time, you're sort of now you're not as shocked. Like mm-hmm. the first time, I doubt you could take in any cinematography.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're just sitting there like, holy shit. But once you sort of get used to the movie, you can really appreciate the other aspects of it.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
like that, the photography that you're talking about, and just
for sure.
the score is crazy mm-hmm. good. Like it's so subtle when it needs to be. Like most scenes are just literally like. Blah, blah, blah. Like that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like you get to shit like the dinner scene mm-hmm. and it's just this wall of just madness. Like it's not even music. It's
yeah.
just like sound coming at you.
Yeah, yeah.
The sounds of terror and it's a good movie.
Yeah. I'd say it has like for me has to be top 5 best horror movies ever.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people would just say it's the sure. best and
that's it. Well, there's different types of horror. So
yeah.
It's
yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
It's yeah, it's tough to narrow it down. Certainly for yeah, for what it does, sure.
Yeah.
Because it basically made an entire genre of movies.
Yeah,
like you
yeah.
just call it a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie.
Uh-huh.
If a bunch of people are getting killed off by like a crazy family, there's so many movies like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's a lot of like just tourists passing through get iced by a bunch of crazy people.
Yeah, yeah. Movies. Like Wrong Turn or whatever. There's like 5 of those.
Oh yeah, and even like Hills Have Eyes, and mm-hmm. so there's so many movies like that.
Yeah,
House of 1,000 Corpses is basically just Texas Chainsaw
yeah, yeah.
made again.
Before we move on, though, I do want to acknowledge my favorite kill, which is often kind of reproduced in its goriest detail, is actually the second kill, where the woman walks into the house after her boyfriend has been sludged to death, and. She sees Leatherface, runs out, and like there's that like really horrifying shot of like where she's on the porch about to leave, and like
right.
Leatherface grabs her, drags her back in, and then just hangs her on a meat hook.
Yeah.
And like they do that all the time throughout the next couple movies, but like it's so brutal, especially because like there isn't a sound. Like you just see her get hung, and you see her go like ah, like she's like in pain, and it's just. It's like so well done. It's not like over the top or anything. It just seems real.
Again, yeah, your mind fills in the blanks. The implied violence there was so much stronger than any actual like watching someone chainsaw like their stomach or
yeah.
whatever.
Actually,
like,
that was on the cover. Like that's on the poster.
Yeah.
It's like Leatherface revving up the chainsaw with her hanging in the background, like trying
yeah.
to get off the hook.
And she just witnesses her boyfriend just get filleted
yeah.
by this chainsaw.
Yeah, it's
ugh.
Insane.
So rough.
There's also that shot towards the end of the movie where Leatherface falls and the chainsaw hits his own leg.
Which
yeah.
is also another crazy thing
yeah.
about this movie.
That's another real life madness. Because what was it? They just put like a slab of meat.
Yeah, they just put some meat on top of his thigh and then they dropped the chainsaw
those
on his leg.
People were out of their mind.
Crazy.
Like I wouldn't be surprised if they showed the whole crew and they just look like the crazy family and they were the ones torturing everybody. Like that.
It's
they
so
were out
nuts.
Of their mind.
Why?
Live
why
chainsaw on your leg?
Why would Gunnar Hansen agree to that?
They gave him drugs. They gave everyone a lot of drugs.
Probably.
That's
there's
the only
explanation. No one in their right mind would accept, like, willingly accept a chainsaw on their leg. Like, that doesn't even make sense.
What was that conversation like? Hey, dude, just take this T-bone, strap, what we're going to do.
Yeah, okay.
All right, we're going to just chainsaw down, and we're going to make sure we don't actually hit your leg.
Fuck that.
But, like, okay, but you're going to be, like, careful?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sure. Sounds good.
All right, let's do
Holy
it.
Shit.
Fuck, man. No, thank you.
It's crazy. But in a weird way, you'd almost, like, that sort of magic of actual live mayhem, to me, it seems like they should have taken some notes for that for some of the later movies, because it really gets lost. I feel like...
The sequel comes how many years later? Like 13 years
yeah,
later?
13 years later.
Already, the film industry's changed.
Yeah.
Like the 74 to what, 88 is like a huge gap in like standards and practices. Like there's no way 88 you're getting away with that.
Was it 73 to 86 actually?
Oh, maybe.
I think it was 86.
That 86. Sounds right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So before we move on, does anyone have anything else about the first movie?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Oh, jumping through windows like crazy.
Oh yeah,
that was
a standard
awesome.
Practice.
Yeah, I just like that. Like that was also like with Matt, like another realistic thing of just like somebody would just be like, "Fuck this," and just jump out the window.
Yeah,
yeah. You got a guy with a chainsaw behind you and a window in front of you. Pretty much 10 out of 10, it's the window.
Again, it speaks to the fact that, like, for the most part, people make the decisions I would have made in
yeah.
that situation,
right, right,
and still get fucked over. Which later, in the remake, in the 2003 remake of Texas Chainsaw, which is actually a movie I do really enjoy, even though it's clearly not as good as the original. But what I think they do well and improve upon the original is that all the characters, for the most part, make exactly the choice I would make in that situation.
Right.
Because, like, even in this one, like, once he enters that house and there's all those weird bone statues and fucked up shit, I'd have been like, okay, you know what? I'm immediately, this is not the house I'm, like, getting help from. Like, I would have just peaced out and said, hey, we're going to walk a couple miles down the way. Let's get out. But, like, in the remake of the Texas Chainsaw, the setups are more favored in the direction of Leatherface and his family. Like, sure. Because the house,
the law on their side.
Yeah, the law's on their side and all that, which we can get into later. But I think what this movie does really well, the remake, I think really, like, it, not, I wouldn't say improves upon because it's not a better movie, but in that one aspect, right, really sends it home.
Well, to me, the biggest thing in the first movie that most viewers probably aren't on the same page with is the picking up the hitchhiker scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have to sort of imagine that that's just something to do with the time.
Yeah, culturally different.
Because back in 73, dumbasses were picking up other dumbasses like all the time. Yeah. It was sort of this thing, hitching a ride and stuff.
It was so crazy though, because like while they're waiting for him to catch up to the van, he's like, just flailing his hands around in the air like, this is not a good idea. But, wait, we made a mistake. Keep driving.
But nowadays, we're a culture raised on movies that have shown us maniacs that murder you when you pick them up.
Yeah.
And I think it has a real effect on, now, obviously, I'm like, I'm not picking up any fucking hitchhikers.
Yeah, fuck that.
But I think that's just sort of, at the time, it was a little different. All right, well, the next movie that we watched was The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Which was okay.
I loved it.
You know, it really, I feel like it really picks up towards the back half of it. It gets pretty entertaining. But it's certainly not without some problems.
Oh, absolutely. This is like if the this is if the 80s horror scene got to make a Texas Chainsaw movie. Like I don't consider everything after Texas Chainsaw is just like, all right, whatever you want to do. You're not touching the first movie in my head. Like, it's like a completely separate thing.
Right.
But like, yeah, there's some good stuff in it. I like the first kill where like suddenly like these guys that are being assholes on the road just get confronted by Leatherface like doing puppetry with his dead brother in the back of a truck and like, with a chainsaw. Like it was super scary looking.
Someone joked on a bridge that was like 20 miles long.
Yeah, it was the bridge long never.
It's an extended bridge sequence that's going on and on and on.
Yeah.
What's his name? The guy who did Dawn of the Dead? He came in on this.
Tom Savini.
Yeah, Tom Savini did the special effects. Doing the effects. And it shows, because the effects are pretty good.
Well, it's worth noting this movie is the one that seems the most connected to people that made the original movie.
Yeah, Tobey Hooper directed it.
Yeah, you got the same director. You got the guy, the cook guy, comes back.
Yeah,
the
father of
a similar cast.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems to pay a lot of homage to the first movie in terms of the characters there. Like, the whole plot is Dennis Hopper is this crazy, like, is he a marshal or is he a lawman at all? Or
he's
is
like
he
a
just
sheriff?
Sort of,
yeah,
sheriff,
he's,
but not,
he's a lawman.
Yeah, yeah,
he's awesome.
But he's the brother of Franklin and the girl in the first movie.
The girl who survived. Yeah, and nobody believed her, but he did.
So he's on this, like, decade-long mission to find the people that murdered his family.
Yeah.
And that's the aspect of the film I find the most interesting. Like, basically anything with Dennis Hopper is, to me, the best part.
It is pretty enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, certainly better than the old twin brother to the hitchhiker. Like, I'm sorry, that character annoys the shit out of me.
You like Chop Top?
I hate Chop Top. Like, there's nothing funny about him to me. There's nothing, like, interesting. It's just like, he has a twin brother that was in Vietnam, okay?
We were super confused at first because he has a birthmark and he's supposed to be the hitchhiker. And we were all like, well, wait a minute, the hitchhiker got ran over. What's going on?
Yeah.
And Stu had to look it up on his phone.
Yeah.
Like, the movie doesn't provide this at all.
No, not at all.
But he looked up on Wikipedia that it's like, oh yeah, Chop Top is supposed to be the brother of the hitchhiker and he was in Vietnam when the first movie was going on. Because clearly that family respects the draft or whatever. Like they seem real in line with the law. Like, and so now he's back and apparently also insane. And he has a metal plate.
Yeah.
To me, that's the only aspect of his character I find interesting is the whole, like, he's got this metal plate and he's lighting up a coat hanger and scratching his head with it. That's so like it's grody so and gnarly.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked that, but I'm with you. He's like very cartoony and just kind of annoying.
It's like the kind of like, it's like when you go to an like some sort of like comedy show or like an improv show and someone's like trying to be the goofiest person on stage and it's just not working. It's just like, dude, just shut up. Like, you'd be scarier if you talked less. And you would be funnier probably if you talked less. Like,
well, maybe I think that's mainly it. Is it's not as funny because it's weird. It's a thin line between that character and something like, say, Beetlejuice.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I find incredibly funny.
Yeah.
But Michael Keaton is really a funny guy, and his performance is great. And that guy is just kind of, I don't know, it's not quite as much. Yeah. Although that guy's in other movies. I think he's in House of a Thousand Corpses
and Devil's Rejects. Yeah,
and he actually shows up in the last Texas Chainsaw movie as like this cameo role. He's one of the family members.
In the newest one.
He's in there.
Gotcha.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, he's the one, he's like holding a shotgun and is like, we Sawyers, we're not coming out, y'all. Like, I recognized his voice.
The one standing up, like him in the middle of the room. All right.
Yeah. And actually we're jumping a little bit ahead. I didn't realize it until I looked it up afterwards, but he's supposed to be in that, the cook guy.
Of the original.
Yeah, which I didn't really pick up on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they throw him in one random shot or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't really play for me. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. We'll get to there eventually.
Yeah, I don't know. This movie, like, comedically, okay, I guess for me the distinction is, like, this movie clearly took a turn where it was trying to be funny as well as horrific, and the comedy falls completely flat for me. Like, I'm not laughing with it. The only thing that I'm laughing
Dennis Hopper's pretty funny.
But do you think that part was played for humor?
I think so.
I have to believe Tobe Hooper kind of said, I want you to channel Frank a bit.
Yeah, totally.
Because he definitely like does a lot of the he does the crazy in this.
I mean, come on, him like going to a store and chainsaw shopping for his murder tools. Pretty silly.
And then on top of that, after he gets it, he goes outside and starts wailing on a log. And the guy who's the guy who like sold it to him is like sitting on the porch, like, going, get that log, get it, like super excited.
That stuff to me, but I don't know. I think a lot of that is just Dennis Hopper has a great performance.
Oh yeah, he can really evoke
this kind of madness, and he's just really funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially, I mean, at the end, like, we were all laughing when he's sitting there, like, it's the devil's playground, and he's just like going at beans.
Starts the war on beans.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. His whole motivation is to kill the family, and as soon as he gets to their lair, apparently all he wants to do is just take out high beams and be nowhere near them for 20 minutes.
Yeah, every time they get close, like, he basically causes a cave collapse that makes it so he can't get to them and just keeps cutting other things.
Yeah, the Dennis Hopper stuff, it actually does get me a little bit, but I don't know, there's something about, like, the family that's, like, being played off as funny, and every time it was just crickets for me.
Yeah.
Like, I just wasn't engaged.
I'm with you. Like, the goofy guys driving at the beginning and the family, not funny. I think the radio personality, there's this sort of lead
Lefty
actress,
or Stretch, I'm sorry.
Stretch. Yeah, Stretch.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of play some laughs with her that really don't work out too well.
Yeah.
I'm not really engaged in the movie until the big sort of showdown at the crazy carnival.
Yeah.
Which looks really cool.
Like, the set is cool. I'm not sure what they did for that. I mean, I imagine maybe it was already a warehouse that they just like did set dressing for, but it's really impressive.
Someone kept joking that it looked like the Lost Boys like hangout in Hook.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it really does. They have this weird murder lair like underground in a mine shaft that's also a carnival or something.
Yeah.
With like tons of like Christmas light type stuff up, and it's like it's very like
super duper 80s.
Yes. You can see the money in this movie.
Yeah.
Like it definitely seems more glossy, but yeah, as a horror movie, it doesn't particularly scare me, and as a comedy, it doesn't particularly make me laugh. So it's like, I don't know, it was a weird in between that I wasn't on board for really.
There's one scene where horror-wise it sort of works for me. Like, most of the movie is just I'm laughing at people getting killed.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the bit where they have is not lefty, but Stretch. Is that
scene is really good.
Where it's like, because they have this weird plot line where Leatherface kind of likes this girl Stretch and doesn't kill her. And then he's got her in the lair and he's got her buddy from the radio station and he like rips the guy's face off and puts, it's this fucked up scene where he puts the guy's face on her.
Yeah.
Puts a cowboy hat on her.
I think he's trying to disguise her.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, he starts dancing with her after.
I mean, he's trying to make her appealing. I think it's a, I don't know. I mean, I could be reading into this way too much because it's a weird movie, but I think he's trying to A, disguise her, and B, like make her more appealing to him and like make her like him so that, because he's like, he's got it in his head that like maybe like you can be my girlfriend or something.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, obviously these movies deal a little bit with like gender bending ideas. I mean, like Leatherface himself wears women's faces and like puts on makeup and stuff, and so it sort of is like the reverse where it's like he kind of likes this girl but obviously he's a little confused sexually, so he puts a man's face on her and then starts dancing. Like, it's, I mean, it's
a little confused sexually.
A little.
I think the scene where she's like spreading her legs as he uses his phallic.
Are you good, Leatherface?
How good are you?
Are you good? I actually, that is one of the scenes I actually did like in the movie because it's just so bizarre.
Well, yeah, it's very strange.
It only was like halfway in that I actually realized that he was jerking off while revving the chainsaw and like smashing it.
I couldn't tell if he was actually jerking off or just had the choke to start the chainsaw and was just kind of faux jerking.
No,
it seems like he's jerking
straight off.
He's got left hand on chainsaw, right hand in the pants.
You know, everything else before this is okay, but that's just too much.
Although,
you know, the guy that plays Leatherface, I'm not that huge a fan of.
In this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was...
You mentioned they go kind of goofy with it.
And his mask is kind of crap,
too. I think Josh, you're the one that said he does a truffle shuffle every time he's got...
That was Stu, but he does have, like, the iconic little... Like, well, it's not iconic. It's kind of become iconic, I guess, culturally. The Leatherface dance, where he just kind of... It is a truffle shuffle with a chainsaw on top.
But he does it every 10 minutes in this movie, and it's kind of strange.
I think what didn't work on that guy's performance, which is funny to say, because really, like, Leatherface, he's got somebody's face on his face, and then he carries a chainsaw and he fucks people up. Like, you wouldn't think there'd be much distinction in, like, what that comes off as on screen. But what I noticed in this movie is that the guy who played him in this movie was too present. There was something about his performance where he seemed very aware.
Well, you know what it is? It's his eyes were constantly looking at everything.
Yeah, and he's reacting to everything so immediately.
He has his eyes really bug-eyed wide. Yeah. And then, every line, everyone, he's like moving and looking at them and looking at everyone. And he's not, he just doesn't, present is the best
way
to put it.
He needs to be
way
kind of
too aware.
Yeah,
he needs
so
to be kind of an animal.
Yeah, he was so abstract in the first movie where like his reactions seemed to like take a little longer than they should. He didn't seem to understand what was going on. He just seemed like a guy with someone's face on. Like,
also, you couldn't really see his eyes in the first movie.
Yeah.
I think there's something about that mask and just the sort of dark eye holes.
That's true.
That makes him way scarier.
Yeah.
And all you see is this fucked up teeth and tongue.
Yeah. Well, like you said, in the first movie, one of your favorite moments is where after a kill, Leatherface is just sort of in this like out of it zone where he's just sitting in front of the window, like not doing anything. There's never a moment where Leatherface stops engaging in something. And I think it just makes him too human in a way that like makes him less scary to me.
And apparently he stole Prince's hair at some point.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Some pretty
he
rocking.
Has...
Well, I mean, it could be that he stole someone who stole someone. Like, basically, he could be wearing somebody's hair that stole.
Yeah, jury's out
hair.
On that.
Yeah,
who knows? I do sort of like in the sort of grand finale, the Chop Top guy. There's this weird scene where he's climbing. It looks like Splash Mountain or something.
Yeah.
But we all sort of got a big laugh out of it. At the top of this mountain is Grandma. This weird sort of, she's sitting there nude. Almost like it's like a shrine where she's holding a chainsaw and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we actually find out she's still alive, even though she just looks like super dead.
She is a mummy.
Yeah.
That's another thing they never really bothered explaining in the series, the sort of prolonged life of the old members of the family, like Grandpa in the first one.
Like,
that's
blood.
Scarier when you don't know, John.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were talking before in the first movie that, like, why is Grandpa, like, 119 still kicking? Like, I mean, it doesn't make sense, but the whole fact that he drinks blood, like,
sure,
could be sort of an idea.
It really reminds me of, you mentioned Lovecraft earlier. There's a Lovecraft short story that's just this guy goes to visit this crazy old man in a house.
Yeah.
And he kind of figures out into it that he's a cannibal. Yeah. But what he realizes is the stuff the guy's talking about is really old stuff. He has like a dialect that's sort of out of date.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's a really old man, he doesn't... He like realizes that he's acting like he's even older than he is. And it's sort of this kind of inference that by being a cannibal and eating other human beings, you can like prolong your life.
Yeah.
And I think that they don't outright ever say it in Texas Chainsaw, but that seems to me to be the case. Like, they're
Franklin
all cannibals.
Hit the head on the nail when he was like, oh, we got Dracula. You know what I mean? Like, that's a strange reference to make for it to be like so accurate.
Totally.
Right off the bat.
But. Yeah, they are sort of just, like vampires, like cannibals eating and prolonging their life.
Yeah, I was a little confused by the grandma scene, just in the sense that in the original movie, when she first goes to the second floor and sees Grandpa, which at that point you don't even know he's still alive, he just looks like a corpse.
Right.
That there is an old lady in that same room.
But she's skeletal. Like,
yeah.
She has no skin.
Which I assumed was Grandma.
Yeah,
like in the first movie. Grandpa's still alive, Grandma's just out, but like whatever, she's still around. But so it caught me off guard in this one where it's like, oh, Grandma's actually this other lady who's still alive and kicking.
That's that was actually Grandma's sister. Grandma was also a nom.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Twin sister.
So she returned from her tour duty. That's why she looks different.
Yeah.
Did you guys have anything else about the second movie?
I don't know. I guess I say overall, like, as most we've learned in a lot of series, that bigger doesn't necessarily mean better.
Sure. Sure.
Leatherface does, I mean, he dies in this, right? The whole family
That's
dies.
That's true.
He does get a chainsaw through the abdomen, compliments yeah. of...
Well, Dennis Hopper drops Dennis a Hopper. Grenade and kills everybody.
The biggest grenade ever. It takes out that whole giant warehousey cave.
Yeah.
Oh, I should also mention, because I know Jess really enjoyed it when we were watching it with her, that Dennis Hopper in his sort of satchel...
Bandolero.
Had like, spare chains for his chainsaws. And also, we didn't really mention it, but not only does he have this giant chainsaw, he also has holstered, like, double other chainsaws that he's busting out. He's constantly whipping chainsaws out.
Oh, yeah. This one also is the first one that introduces... When Stretch is hiding in their hideout and, like, kind of seeing things, she sees that the family has gotten Leatherface a gift. And it's, like, a new, like, totally, like, pimped out chainsaw that says, "The saw is family" on it.
Oh, yeah,
and that's the
right.
first time that comes into play.
Is this the one where it's on the saw? I know it's in the next
no,
one.
No, I'm sorry. You know what? That is the next
it's
one.
It's the next
that's,
one.
I'm sorry. That is the next one. The dad says it in this
right,
one.
Right. Well, and, there's that whole scene where he's like, you have to choose either sex or the saw with the woman. And that's he says the line, "The saw is family.
Turn traitor for a piece of tail."
And that is a cool line.
It's I do like the Saw
so
family,
good that it's like you almost wish it was in the first one somewhere.
Yeah.
Love Saw's family.
Yeah.
Are they called Sawyers in this movie?
Yes, this is the one that calls them the Sawyers.
Yeah, they officially say Sawyers. In the first movie, we
There's
never
no
get
names.
A name or anything.
Yeah,
But they're the Sawyers because he's doing his chili cook-off.
Yeah, yeah.
And that I actually...
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of...
That is a gag
hard
that's pretty
chilled.
Funny.
What is it? She finds a finger bone in the
oh,
chili.
Right.
And he's like, it's a hard
it's like
shell.
It's a corn pepper shell.
Yeah,
hard corn.
It's a peppercorn. Yeah, peppercorn shell. Don't worry about that. It's like clearly a tooth.
Oh, that's what it is, a tooth, right?
Yeah. I guess it does have to be mentioned, the chainsaw duel between Hopper and Leatherface is pretty awesome.
Right.
Like, just in the absurdity.
It's like a Robin Hood sort of, like, fencing duel with chainsaw.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's actually, I mean, obviously it's a movie, so like it doesn't have to. The physical feats are not as impressive because they aren't real, but it is cool that that Leatherface gets a chainsaw embedded in his gut that goes all the way through, gets up and keeps fighting, and Dennis Hopper has to whip out the two smaller chainsaws while the third one is just still dangling from him and like keep fighting him. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I guess for me, ultimately, this movie it's. To me, it's sort of a failure, but what is good about it just comes too late. Like, it's just like the first hour of that movie, I just don't care.
Well, I wouldn't ever say it was a good movie. Yeah. I would just say it's like a mediocre movie that has good moments that are okay.
I would kind of compare this to like Godzilla is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and this is kind of like King Kong versus Godzilla, where it's kind of a toy box movie where you're just kind of,
right,
there's a couple cool things that you're doing, but like you're making it up, so it's not as good.
Except King Kong versus Godzilla is amazing.
Also, the last movie is more like Godzilla than I would have ever imagined.
Oh, yeah.
We can talk about later. The sort of villain turned hero turn.
That's was true.
Was a bit surprising.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, the next movie was Leatherface : The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Here's your invitation to come join Leatherface. It's his
addiction to keep you face to face. Pardon me while I take a nap here, guys.
AKA no face, because nothing happens.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what this movie was
about.
It's
pretty bad. It's weird. I had a few friends when I said I was doing this marathon, and I actually saw this movie kind of much, Josh, like you mentioned how you saw the first Chainsaw and then you went and watched a bunch of the other ones. I did something very similar with my friend. I was like, well, there's more of these. Let's check them out. And I remember seeing Leatherface. I'd only seen it once when I was in high school. And my take on it was like, this is fucking bad.
Yeah.
And I said that to some friends of mine that before we were doing this marathon. And I got this weird response from two different guys that don't even know each other. That was like, no. The third one's pretty good. Like, don't count it out.
Yeah.
The fourth one's bad, but the third one's all right. And so I went in genuinely being like, okay, well, let me see what you got. And I'm happy to report that the third one is fucking awful.
It's garbage.
Like,
it was just boring.
Yeah.
It's garbage.
Oh, like, and I don't know how much of that is because a lot of our opinions of these movies in a marathon may differ greatly from if we just sort of watched it. Like, if it was us three one night, we hadn't seen a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie in years, and we decided to have a laugh and throw in Leatherface.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine it wouldn't be as bad as experiencing it after two Texas Chainsaw movies prior to it, both of which that are better and have better scenes. It just sort of leaves you like, unless you're going to wow me and do something amazing, I'm just not going to like it.
Well, I think that's what's great about doing what we do, which is like a movie on its own, your tolerance is a bit stronger. You can sit through things you may not care about. You'll judge them more, more fairly, but certainly less harshly. But in a marathon setting, you got to bring something to the table. Like, whether it's awful, like, so we can be laugh and be entertained, or like great and be like mesmerized. Like, this movie filters out the mediocrity so fast, which is what this movie is. It brings nothing interesting to the table.
Well, it's like they just do a sort of greatest hits of stuff we've already seen, and they don't necessarily do it terribly, although sometimes they do.
Yeah.
But it's just, like you said, like, that's not enough.
Well, can you remember one, this might sound kind of barbaric, but can you remember one good kill from this? Like, that's what these movies, it's not what they're about, but, like, in a marathon context, like, those are the highlights.
Yes.
The kill moments. And can you remember one good kill from this?
Well, to be fair, no. But also, we had an option when we were watching Leatherface, because the DVD we had a R-rated version and an unrated version. So perhaps my friends saw the unrated version of the film, because I hear that's much more gory. But we decided, in order to be true to, like, this is what played in the theater.
Yeah.
I usually, when we have these sort of options, go with the theatrical version.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
just
that
so we can sort of judge it fairly.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it fell flat the most, because most of the kills were like Leatherface revs up the chainsaw, thrust it forward, and then we cut away to a swamp or something.
I really don't remember
a single
kill. No,
you don't
really
see anything.
I think I recall just the one kill where he did just what you said, which is he like jams the chainsaw and you see the guy's face as like he's going, but like, you know, you don't see anything actually happening. And not that I even really need to see it. It's just like, if that's the only thing I can remember, like, you stabbed a guy with a chainsaw. Congratulations. This is the third movie where this guy's got a chainsaw.
Right.
Like,
and it's not like the first movie has these really graphic shots of violence. But it's just they, like you said, with that hook and stuff, like, they do a better job of implying something really disturbing.
Well, yeah, they find a way to resonate with you and make you go, ugh! Like, have this like reaction of just like, that would be horrifying. That's what it's a horror movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the nature of a franchise, is if you're gonna make a sequel or a reboot or a remake or something, you have to bring something to the table. Not the same thing we've already seen, but not as good.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to, like, at least Texas Chainsaw 2, although I don't like it, had interesting things in it. You know, things that would catch my attention.
Right, at least it's different.
It's different.
At least, like, let's throw Dennis Hopper in here with some madness and dual wielding chainsaws. And, like, it escalates and is kind of crazier.
Yeah, this has zero uniqueness to it at all. It's just...
I've been thinking about it. And here's everything I can remember. A guy gets chainsawed to death in swamp water.
Yes.
Okay, a guy gets chainsawed to death just by stabbing as a tree, which is on a tree, like the one we talked about earlier. And then Ken Faree. He gets chainsawed on the shoulder or something.
Yes.
Or something on the way out. And I think, and then there's some people that get shot by Ken.
Right.
But like.
Yeah, there's a lot of nothing.
That's all that happens. Like, that is it. That's all that happens.
Well, I remember Ken Faree punches a hillbilly into the swamp in like one punch.
And they drown.
Funny. Yeah. And then he just. Blah, blah,
blah. Yeah.
And by the way, why is this like down in the Bayou, Louisiana swamp setting? Like, what the fuck? Like,
isn't this supposed to be Texas?
Is it in Texas? Like, I don't get it.
I don't know.
I mean,
not swampland.
No, not at all.
I don't know.
Why the fuck?
Yeah.
There's no explanation for why.
There's like
all these
survivalists that are out there, like, doing, like, preparing for the apocalypse or something. I just don't even know what this movie's about. Like, really.
Well, and let me tell you, it's a woman and her friend, and they're traveling from LA. Oh, well, but they're gonna break up, right? So it's a on the fringe, sort of almost exes, boyfriend and girlfriend that are traveling the country from LA to, they're going to, I think, like Florida or something. I don't know.
The Bayou, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. And they're on their way, and then they're stopped by weird, creepy people. And that's the other thing is sort of the family members in this movie that aren't Leatherface are just very not memorable.
They didn't even try and have a through line.
Yeah, there's no connection of like who they are or why they're crazy. There's like a weird gas station attendant with a like weird white eye just going, hey, well, let me fill up your tank. Let me take a picture.
I'm going to fill up your tank in the most sexual way I can muster.
And he's hardly getting the job done. And then I guess the most notable star of the film is Viggo Mortensen is in it, which his character is sort of a nothing. Like he's just kind of he looks like a... Like the Marlboro Man.
Yeah.
He's just sort of this slick cowboy.
He plays like the lure of the family.
Yeah.
McConaughey of the family.
Sure. And he just turns out to be one of the crazies. That's like a big reveal when they're in the house. He's like, hey, it's me.
And he's one of the ones who gives him the special chainsaw, which is in this
one.
Like the Excalibur chainsaw.
Sure. And those are honestly the only ones I don't even really remember.
There's the hook hand guy. There's weird eye guy.
Yeah.
There's Viggo Mortensen. There's Leatherface. There's Leatherface's daughter.
The hook hand guy might as well be an extra in Scarface trying to kill Tony Montana. Like, he brings nothing interesting to the table.
Is this the one where there's a little girl?
There's a daughter. Leatherface's daughter.
Oh, right.
And then their mom, which I guess they're just all having sex with. Like, is implied.
Yeah. But I don't know. And like we said, there's just these survivalists that was one of the scenes that kind of perked me up a little bit was there's these survivalists just sort of like shoot up the house.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then
it was unfortunate that everybody they managed to kill were all the people that wouldn't be able to do anything to hurt you. Like, oh, we got that old lady and we got the guy with the hand, his ear.
Yeah. There is one scene that I think is kind of okay. It's not great, but there's a kind of funny joke with Leatherface playing with a speak and spell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's showing like a clown or something, and he just keeps typing food over and over. Like, he keeps saying no. And he just keeps, no, food, food. That was sort of funny.
Yeah.
I remembered this differently. I thought he goes food and then meat and then like keeps doing
He just types food over and over again. Just relentlessly like food.
This time it'll work. Well, I mean, they do say that Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Evidently.
So, I mean, there you go. Case in point.
There's also, we kind of laughed because towards the finale of the film, the woman is out with, I think it's the guy from Dawn of the Dead. They're out in like literally the middle of nowhere, plains you can see for miles. And then the guy with the weird eye just gets the drop on them, like from off frame, just goes, gotcha.
I was hiding behind that bush.
Yeah. And we just laugh because we're like, what? they wouldn't see him coming.
I know, it was a just, million miles
it
away.
It literally was like the middle of the desert.
Yeah. It's like you stand someone in a middle of a huge white room and then someone boo scares you. It's like, what? Like, what? Yeah,
as long as we don't see it, boo.
And then, you know, 5 minutes after, not even, like 2 minutes after that, when they kill him and they leave him in the truck bed for some reason, instead of just dumping him off, they drive off and then Leatherface is standing behind him. Like just watching him leave. Like another, like, how do these people keep sneaking up on them?
Wait, is this the one where he has the leg brace?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Which acknowledges the first movie, but doesn't acknowledge the second movie.
Yeah, we spent a long time trying to place, like, when is this in the timeline? What's going on? And the leg brace was sort of our hint of okay, I guess if he, like, cut up his leg in the first movie, mm-hmm. he would need this brace. But obviously it has no continuity with the second movie. So, like many movies to come after, they sort of go this route of like, yeah, the first movie's canon, and anything after that is, you don't know.
This is easily my least favorite Leatherface, though.
Yeah.
He's the worst.
Worse than the next one?
Mask.
Okay, yeah, the next one, at least I try to do some weird stuff.
The mask is stupid in this. I just hate this.
It's like you said, like, no face. He's just so not memorable.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing they have him do. They don't even go the sort of weird transvestite mm-mm. area. He just sort of... like sews up skin, puts the face on, is like, rawr.
Yeah,
no, he might as well done, be
Jason
check.
Voorhees. Like, yeah, it's just nothing.
It was irrelevant, really. Which in the next movie, they once again not good, but they at least try and do something interesting with it.
Sure.
With, like, they really push the gender bending stuff in the next one.
Do you want to just hop into the next one? Or
yeah, I'm looking. I'm looking over my notes of Leatherface, and it's like a barren wasteland. I've just wrote like boring.
Oh, one thing worth noting: you can barely see anything in this movie.
Yeah,
when they're out night. In the woods, it's really bad.
Oh, there is. I'm looking at this. There is a funny. Not funny, but just really stupid dumb bit where the guy's loading up bullets into his gun and then he loads it and a car's coming at him and he dry fires. And rather than jumping out of the way of the car,
he just gets hit.
He just goes, oh shit, and just gets hit.
Yeah,
but doesn't die.
Yeah, he's just
so
okay.
It has no consequence.
Yeah.
It was
and
so 45 strange.
Seconds later, he just gets up and goes, got hit by a truck.
Yeah, you're just like, what?
I appreciate Ken Foree just because I'm a huge fan of Dawn of the Dead, but he didn't need to be cast in anything. Like, he's not a good actor. He really isn't.
What are you talking about, me?
It's just, I've never seen him in anything other than Dawn of the Dead that I liked him in.
Well, the thing about Dawn of the Dead with him, and all those people, is you don't really have to be that great an actor for that movie, because they're sort of just playing it just like average Joe.
Yeah, just straight.
And they're not putting anything on. I think the problem is... he was in that movie, so now every movie they put him in, like in this movie, he's a survivalist with skills. And it's just like, nah, he's just supposed to be like a regular guy. I mean, I know he's a cop, but...
I guess that during the marathon, the only movie I'd be interested in seeing is a movie where Ken Foree is up against the actor who played Candyman. Because like, they just, like, to me, they're like the same
guy. The showdown.
Yeah, the showdown.
Well, we will run screaming from Leatherface. If you haven't seen that one.
We'll sleepwalk away.
Yeah, that's more accurate.
Right, yeah. You can skip that one if you've never seen it. Trust us. But the next movie was The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation.
All right.
And as I said earlier, get that bitch, Vilmer. Go!
murder at the Moon Tower. Here we go.
This one is the most, I think, psychotic-inducing. Only because if you try and make sense of it, you'll go insane.
You know what's... You guys are gonna... It's weird. You might give me a bunch of shit, and it would be well-deserved. But had you guys seen this movie?
No. Yes, before? I saw this
Josh,
once.
You'd seen it. But yeah, Matthew, this was your first time, right? Yeah.
It was in a hazy fog of my memory more than a decade ago.
I remember when I saw it the first time, I didn't really like it that much. I thought it was sort of ridiculous. But for some reason, this, like it's not good. I'm not saying that. But this time... for some reason, it sort of stuck out with me with a little more of a glimmer of like quality.
Well, maybe because you're waking up from the dream that was Leatherface.
Sure. Maybe anything after Leatherface would be good. But I sort of appreciate that they just go so zany with it.
Yeah.
Because, like, what else are you going to do? Like, how do you follow up Texas Chainsaw? It's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well just, like, throw everything in the kitchen sink and just get nuts. And I kind of like that about it.
Yeah, I mean, it has like a, it has a kooky tone that I appreciate. But again, like the parts that really interest me come way too late in the movie. Like the first like 30 minutes is really just like the prom night
stuff. Yeah, it's pretty standard fare.
Yeah.
Like, prom night.
And it just feels really out of place. It's like, why are we spending so much time with prom night? Like, it's like, I don't know. It just seemed really weird to me. But then later, once McConaughey starts getting on a roll, like, just like most movies with him.
And his robot leg.
And his robot
his,
leg.
His like hydraulic remote control operated. His like
Terminator leg.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty strange.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not, I enjoyed this one more than I would say 2 or 3 just for the kookiness, but yeah, it's not a good movie.
Well, it definitely throws a lot out there with, it's weird. Like the first movie has a bunch of madness and there's no explanation for how crazy it is. And that's fine. But this one, to me, this one presents a lot of nuttiness and doesn't explain it. But the reason it's not quite as okay is because they seem to be supplying more like answers than questions. It's very like Lost answers movie of like, oh, you wanted to know why the family was crazy. Well, like, here's this answer out of left field that leaves you with 50,000 more questions.
Yeah.
Like, to me, there's just the guy in the suit that shows up. That's like
the Illuminati.
The boss man.
The keychains on his weird like skin art stomach that like licks what's her name's face?
Yeah.
Renee Zellweger's
face. Like, it's okay, I'll get you out of here.
And all his lines are like, don't you know why I'm paying you? I want to know the true meaning of horror. It's like, all right, wait a minute. So the movie is putting forth that this family's being funded by some billionaire who wants to steady fear or something. Like, what is happening?
I don't know.
Yeah, and Josh, like you mentioned, like on Matthew McConaughey's truck, it says Illuminati, as if I guess they're in the Illuminati or something. It's a pretty cool.
Somebody else actually noticed that, but yeah. I mean, it was, that was, this movie's so crazy.
But
it's
that's
just
a really
insane.
Poor way to hide the fact that you're an Illuminati member.
Write it on your truck.
Yeah, just having it on the truck.
Like. And there's this character that's introduced, like the trope of the person that they meet outside of the family that they think is safe, but is actually a part of the family.
Is that the like real estate lady?
Yeah, this real estate lady who's like, you know, attractive and stuff. And
well, she flashes her breasts, which I believe is the first nudity.
Which I
first
missed.
Boobs. Yeah.
So the only boobs in a 7-movie marathon I missed.
Yeah, it was the one and only time, right?
Yeah.
I can't think of any other time.
Well, there was kind of almost some in the last movie,
right,
but not really.
Sure.
But yeah, and she's introduced and she's she adds a whole other layer of crazy because like,
the pizza.
At the stand, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. The
gotta
pizza.
Get the pizza.
They make so big a deal out of getting pizza in this movie. It's ridiculous. Like, it's
like an extended scene. Yeah, because she's like, it's like, don't worry, I'll pick up some pizza. And then we get a whole scene of
it's
her driving.
It's a subplot through. Of the movie, I would
By
say.
By the way, drive-through pizza?
Yeah, well, and like, never. And
like, anyone ever done that
no,
one?
Like, never.
And also, the place she goes to advertises burgers and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they do everything.
Clearly, because it's a burger drive-through that they throw a pizza sign on. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, she adds a whole new weird layer to, like, they have the dinner scene. But at the dinner scene, like, well, first off, Leatherface is, like, full-on transvestite.
Yeah.
Looks like Cher. Or something.
And I think that's what they really went for in this movie. Because even the marketing of it, like all the posters are like Leatherface with like fishnet stockings
and
lipstick.
Like, yeah,
and all
that. Using a chainsaw for lipstick.
Yeah,
and stuff. And
they really went all the way with this like transvestite.
Well, and
aspect. She's
in this really strappy, like flashy dress. Like she's going to like some nightclub
but
or something.
It looks like duct tape mixed with like that.
And like she and McConaughey are like, we're going to have sex. And well, no, we're not. And like, we're just like, it was just like all over the place. Very strange. Didn't make any sense. She had lots of makeup on. Like, it was so spread out over all sorts of madness and not honed in any sense. Very
but
strange.
The only thing holding, just the glue holding this shit show together was Matthew McConaughey to me.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Because if you're gonna try to cast just a crazy hick, like, to me, he was the only one that was doing a family member that came anywhere close to kind of capturing the magic of the first movie.
Well, there weren't any others, right? I mean, it's her, Leatherface, and him. That's the only 3 people in the house, right? To the best of my knowledge, I can't remember. Well, there was the guy who
No, this
quotes
is the one
Grant.
With the girl, right? Don't they have the little girl?
No, that's the third
one. Is I thought it was
the one
with
the yakety yak, don't talk back, that girl with like the little skull doll.
Yeah.
That's the third one. That's Leatherface. Maybe. Leatherface.
I don't know how I got him confused. So similar.
Yeah, that's the third one. But there was a guy, a total like Southern boy who quotes Grant and totes a shotgun.
Right. Yes.
I don't know where. I can't remember.
Was
where
he was such
fit
a throwaway, in. Like yeah. non-memorable guy.
Was this the one where the dinner scene had like five family member or five like bodies sitting at the table?
Yes, that's what it was. That's how they filled about. It out. Yeah. There's just yeah. dead people. Like,
yeah, just yeah. bodies.
That'll make it creepy.
Oh, and there was a grandpa. There was like a grandpa.
Yes, there was a
guy.
Grandpa. Yes. There was a grandpa in the last movie too. Yeah. Grandpa keeps coming.
There's a lot of grandpas. Yeah. But McConaughey just had this aspect to him that I enjoyed. That it was just, he was so crazy. Like those scenes of him slashing himself with a razor and just laughing crazy and crying. And
he actually had my favorite kill in the movie.
Oh, yeah?
The one where he's like in the door frame and all you see is his face and you hear his mechanical leg servo going.
As he's crushing.
Right. As he's crushing somebody under him. You don't see anything, but just right. his just like ecstasy of like machine leg killing somebody.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that was
know.
Pretty grisly.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's not a... This is movie sucks. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then the
and Renee Zellweger's in it. We should mention that. She's the woman.
Yeah, and she's kind of like...
She's okay. Like,
yeah, she's kind of just neutral. Like, she does fine. She doesn't bring anything to the table.
Boy, does she put Leatherface in his place, though.
Yeah, that was weird. That was the scene where, like, Leatherface is, like, hanging out or whatever, and he, like, gets up to start to do something, and her being the victim in the situation says, Leatherface, you sit down. And then he, like, does
right,
it.
Right, does.
Yeah. What the fuck is that?
Because she had reached her point, and I'm not saying, like, this is what I would have written, but, like, she had reached her point of, like, I've had it, and I'm out of here, and you're all crazy, and this is bullshit, and she gets up, and she's got a thing, and Leatherface stands up to stop her. And, she just says, you sit your ass down. And he just kind of goes like, ooh, ooh, ooh. And like,
sits
down.
In what world do you tell Leatherface to sit down and he does it?
I just had a crazy thought about what this movie might mean. And it's because at the end, Renee Zellweger goes in the limo with the guy. And he's like, don't worry, it's all over. Like, you're fine. You're not going to be terrorized anymore. Like, was his mission to run this kook house and then find the girl that would like transcend the madness and be the strongest one to like make it out of there or something?
I feel you're giving way too much credit.
He picks her up and he seems like that's his goal is to like.
But then doesn't he drop her off somewhere after?
He says, do you want to go to the hospital or the police office? Like,
and she goes to the police station.
And she goes to the hospital.
Oh, the hospital?
Because that's where you see the woman from the first
but
movie.
Maybe that's it. Oh, maybe that's those few minutes of him just smiling at her was like all they ever wanted.
I don't fucking know.
Well, that was like.
I don't know.
Right after the scene where they're in the. There's a truck chasing her, and she's in another truck, and they're all driving. And then, like for some reason, there's a biplane that comes, and they're all
there's this old couple like drinking Bloody Marys and flying around.
Oh no, the Bloody Mary people were in the RV. That's what Renee Zellweger gets in the RV.
Oh, they're not in the plane.
No, and then they die because they get run off the road.
So we never see who's in the plane.
So the plane just comes out of nowhere, and while they're foot racing, like it just swoops down and like kills Matthew McConaughey by hitting it with a propeller.
Yeah,
and then just flies away.
Yeah, like literally out of nowhere.
It has nothing to do with
it.
Anything.
Just drives in. And then in case it's not just nutty enough, they cut to McConaughey and there's a big pile of blue blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I honestly...
Is that his servo leaking or is that like
well,
he has blue
out of his
blood?
Face.
Well, no, I honestly think that was not intentionally supposed to look blue. I think they just had like, you know, like some, like for film, like they use some like Karo syrup or whatever. It's like some like really darkly tinted blood. I think it was just the lighting they used. I think it was like, it came out
really?
So, I think it just came out so black. Because
it was blueberry blue. Like
no, I know. I think
it was kind of purpley
glow. I think it came out super black on the dirt because it was just so dark and the light that was emitting from it made it look blue. I don't think it was intentional. Man. If it was,
I don't know. I think they were throwing out like he's a cyborg or something.
What?
Like,
robot.
Because the movie throws so much craziness at you. Like it's like, and why not? Why not he's a robot or something?
To me, I don't know. I rationalize that they just used too dark a blood for the scene. It was on dirt and it came off like it color timed wrong. That's what I saw, but I don't know.
Dude.
Here, John, let me lay it out like this. What makes more sense? Shitty color timing or that he's a cyborg?
I don't think it was a mistake. I think it looked
so
to me...
So he's a robot?
It looked to me like, hey guys, holy shit, check it out, blue blood. What does that mean? And they just had... I don't think they had an answer, But I think they're just trying to be crazy.
There's just such a weird government conspiracy, Robo-Leg, like all sorts of things. Like I forget who said it, but somebody said that the X-Files was popular during when this came out.
Sure, sure.
And they just possibly tried to throw this in to make it more marketable.
Just go nuts with
it. So, I mean, it's possible they were just trying to like go, whoa, there's a bigger picture happening.
Hey, well, you know what? We're talking about it. It got us.
Mission accomplished, McConaughey.
And then, of course, our grand finale is Leatherface dancing around for the 20th time. But this one, he's full on like weirdly like diva'd out.
Yeah,
with like even wig. Boobs. He has upgraded from just a face to also a chest.
Yeah, like I'm assuming he just took some woman's chest and was like wearing it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, and he's dancing around. Stupid. For the 20th
time. Yeah,
it's
awful.
Well, in the second movie, he doesn't get the last dance. It's actually...
right, it's the...
Stretch gets the last girl. Dance.
Yeah, she's gone nuts and is just sort of dancing around.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I will say, Next Generation's pretty bad. But if you're going to watch... If you've seen 1 and 2 and you're going to watch either 3 or 4, like...
4.
You'd watch 4. Like
4 because there's more source material to laugh at.
Yeah. Did you guys have anything else?
Absolutely not.
But nope. Done.
All right, that's going to do it for part 1 of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Marathon. Be sure to check back in a week or so when we post part 2. In the meantime, we're actually trying to figure out what we're going to do for our February marathon. So if you have any suggestions, please email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. And there you can also send us any questions or comments you may have. In addition to that, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cinemarathon or follow us on our Twitter feed at cinemarathonpod. That's cinemarathonpod. And all of this information can be found on our website, which is cinemarathonpodcast.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.